Our next speaker is Rabbi Moshe Elephant, who wears many hats at the OU. He's the COO, Chief Operating Officer, and we have to thank him a lot in his role as COO of getting us this place right here. That was, he came in the clutch when we didn't have a place, as I mentioned before. He's also the head of the new company department. Whenever a company comes to the OU for certification, they are first set up by the new company department. And he's also an executive rabbinic coordinator. It's a great kavod for me to introduce Rav Elephant Shlita, and also Achron Chavah for me. We share a little bit in giving the Daf Yomi on the web. Rabbi Elephant is the main magachir. Whenever he can't make it, I'm the official sub, Rabbi Elephant.
Shkoyach, Rabbi Grossman. Actually, Rabbi Grossman deserves a lot of credit for putting together this wonderful program and for all the other things that he does for the OU, especially in the area of Habatzas Torah. When Rabbi Grossman asked me to speak about the state of the union, the state of the OU, the Orthodox Union, I had somewhat of a dilemma, because I don't recall the last time I heard the State of the Union address from the President of the United States. And therefore, I didn't have a speech to model myself after. So I didn't know what to do. I was almost going to tell Rabbi Grossman maybe he should ask someone else to do it. And then I remembered that there's a famous vort from the Baal HaTanya. The Baal HaTanya used to say, you have to live with modern times. What does it mean you have to live with modern times? He used to say that everything that's going on in the world, you could find in the Parashas HaShavua. And therefore, I decided, let me look at the Parashas HaShavua. Maybe that's where we should look at the State of the Union. And of course, everything is Minas Shemayim. And as we just learned, Parashas Re'eh, this Pir Shabbos, we know so many halachas about macholos asurois are referred to in Parashas Re'eh. But the purpose of my address today is not really to go into various aspects of halacha. The next 4 days, those people who have been here the last 2 weeks have had and will have, in Mitzvah Hashem, the opportunity to hear about different OU policies, and you just heard a shiur a few moments ago, and you're going to be hearing, I understand, more shiurim. So I wanted to take a little different approach. I wanted to speak about what we at the OU believe is required to be an effective hashgacha. I know many of the people sitting here are people who are involved in giving hashgacha, people who are involved who may be interested at some point in the future in getting involved in giving hashgachas for Mitzvah Hashem, rabbanim of communities. And the one thing that we all have in common, I hope, is that we all want to eat kosher food. So in this week's parasha, I think the requirements of what a good hashgacha are about, and I'm not speaking only about the OU, are here, and I'd like to speak about them and bring some examples. Pasuk, after it speaks about the Isser, Loisavashu Gedi B'chalei V'moi, which is the Yisayid of Hilchas Isser V'heter, the Hilchas of Basa B'chalav, says, L'man Tilmad Lira Es Hashem Alekecha Kol Hayomim. So Pasuk Pshat is L'man Tilmad Lira Es Hashem Alekecha Kol Hayomim. A Yid has an obligation to be a Yirah Shemayim. One shot that I saw is, as we learned in the Gemara, those that learned Afyoimi, as you learned in the Gemara last week, that everything, Torah is only a Tara L'Darta, it's only a gate to Yirah Shemayim. The Darta, the main focus, is supposed to be Yirah Shemayim. So if a person wants to come to Yirah Shemayim, he has to be careful about Macholos Asuris. As we know, there's so many tshuvas that are written about people who were careful not to eat machalos asuris, maybe more than other isurim, because metamtem is alev, it prevents yirah shemayim. So if somebody is makbid on machalos asuris, for example, like sabashal gadi b'chalev imoy, he will come to l'man tuma liras Hashem alakecha. But I was thinking perhaps another pshat. If l'man tilmad, if you want to learn hilchas machalos asuris, if you want to be involved in giving hashgachas, you have to be a person that is liras Hashem alakecha kol hayomim. The first requirement for being involved in giving hashgachas is yirah shamayim. That's the first requirement. And someone who doesn't have that requirement, as great as the Talmud Chacham that he is, and as much as he knows about Hilchos Issur Heter and other halachas, cannot be effective in this area. And if we're here to speak about the State of the Union, Baruch Hashem, I'm happy to say that, and I presume you will meet many of them and you'll see, have a chance to see our offices. We have, Baruch Hashem, just in this building alone, over 50 Rabbonim working in the Kashrus department, and we have hundreds of Mashgichim all around the world. But all of these people, all the Rabbonim in our office, have Smicha, Tamidei Chachamim, Mechabrei Sfarim. But what's most important in their qualification to being able to be involved in this Avodas HaKodesh is the fact that they're all Yirei Shamayim. And let me explain to you why. Giving a hechsher is not easy. Giving a hechsher means that you have to be involved with many different people. And frankly, and I tell this very often to the people that want jobs at the OU, the rabbanim at the OU probably work more with goyim and non-religious Jews than with religious Jews. Because if we certify companies all around the world and all around the country, we could well understand that most of these companies are not owned by Frumi Eden. And it's much easier to say yes than to say no. We all know that. And the company is under pressure. They could put pressure on you. And to keep that balance of Yirah Shamayim, and not to always take the easy way out, but to do what's necessary, requires a very great degree of Yirah Shamayim. It requires constant encouragement and constant preparation to have that Yirah Shamayim. So I think that's one requirement that we could speak about at the OU. But then there's another requirement which is also important. The Pasuk, after speaking about the Isser of eating dam, which we know the Torah mentions that Isser many times and is a very serious Isser, says, Shmor v'shamatas kol hadvarim ha'elam. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks the obvious question. The Pasuk should have said, Shamat, Shema, learn the Hilchas Macholos Asuris, and then, Vishamarta, after you know the Halachas, you will know what to do. But the Pasuk says just the opposite, Shmar, follow the Halachas, and then only afterwards, Vishamarta, learn them, review them. What's the Pasuk teaching us? Says the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, that the Pasuk is teaching us that even if you're Baruch Hashem, in the Madrega, in the status of Shmor, that you know and you're following the halachas, it's not good enough. Vishamata, you have to constantly review what you're doing. Because there's always new things happening. And one of the things that we pride ourselves at the OU, I came to the OU 19 years ago, and one of the first things that I became involved with at the OU is what's called the review department. We're constantly reviewing our hashgachas. We're constantly reviewing what we're doing to make sure, are we doing what's right? Could it be done better? Are there new developments that we should be aware of? And I still remember I was young and wet behind the ears, and I asked the rabbonim who were here at that time, well, what happens if we call a company, we tell the company we have to do things differently? And this company might be under the OU hashgacha before any of us were born, and they've been doing something the same way for all these years. And one of the things that we always tell companies is that we're Orthodox Jews and the laws don't change. So if the laws don't change, why was this supervision good in this fashion till now, and now you're changing it? If it was If the laws don't change, you can't say the law changed, and nothing changed in my factory. I've been making the same thing the same way all these years. Such an attitude is unacceptable in giving a hashgacha. It's an unacceptable attitude. The only attitude we have is, and it's not easy, it's a very good question that this company is asking. It's a very serious question that's asking. And of course we have to respond to the company in a mature, intelligent manner. And the best manner is usually the honest answer, and telling them that we're constantly reviewing what we're doing. And we're constantly, like, they're trying to upgrade their systems, and they're trying to upgrade the quality of the product that they're manufacturing and selling. So too are we. But saying that we're just going to leave it the way it is because that's the way it was is unacceptable in giving a hashgacha. You constantly shmar v'shamata. And I can tell you that every one of the OU facilities was reviewed many times. Even though we have chashev and mashgichim in the facilities, we bring in mevinim, the people who have been here for the first 2 weeks, have met some of them, who are the leaders in the field of kashrus, people like Rabbi Goldzweig and Rabbi Lifshitz, Rabbi Stone, who have been doing this for so many years, and we review every facility on a regular rotation basis, and we actually find many new things. Most importantly, we find new people. You know, nobody stays in a job forever. There's a turnover of people in the companies. Not always in most of the companies that we certify is kashrus the number one priority. And therefore, they don't even get a chinuch on what they're supposed to be doing as a certified facility. And there is no hashgacha. It makes no difference what kind of a structure you have to the hashgacha. Even if you have a mashgiach tamidi, and even if you have many mashgiachim tamidim, if you don't have the cooperation, and it's really much more than just cooperation, I would use the word participation, of the management of the company or the facility you're certifying, you cannot succeed. Because all of the violations that you see companies, and you see in the papers, company use the OU without permission, many of those are companies that are certified. And many of them are with companies that have very good mashgichim and have very good systems. But all of this is based on people. So we're constantly trying to educate the people who we certify their companies, who, as I said, are not Jewish or certainly not frum, to know what it's all about, to work on new systems together. Another point. I saw a very interesting Yaivitz. He says that the Torah mentions the Isser of Laisavashal Gedi B'chalei V'imoi, the Isser Basa B'cholav that we refer to, three times. And he says two of the three times when the Torah mentions the Isser Basa B'cholav, right afterwards the Torah speaks about the mitzvah of Bikurim. That we know that the first fruit had to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash of the Sheves Haminim. And he asks, what's the connection between the Issa Basa B'cholav and the Chiyiv of the Mitzvah Bikurim? So he says a very interesting vart. He says that the Torah mentions the Issa Basa B'cholav three times. One is the Issa Achila, we're not allowed to eat Basa B'cholav. One is the Issa Bishul, we're not allowed to cook Basa B'cholav. And one is the Issa Hanoh, we're not allowed to have Hanoh from Basa B'cholav. Says the Yaivitz, it's incredible what he knew. He says, there will be a time in future generations, he says, that there will be an invention. Somebody will realize that if you cook basa b'cholof and you inject it into a tree, the fruits of that tree will be a better fruit. So the Torah HaKadosh is telling us, even though you want bikurim, even though you want such very good first fruits that you're actually going to bring to the Beis HaMikdash, remember there's an Issa Basa B'cholof. What is the Torah teaching us? I think what the Torah is teaching us is that we, who are involved in giving hashgachas, or going to be involved in giving hashgachas, have to be up to date in modern food technology. Food technology is a science. It's no different than any other science, physics and computers and technology. food science in all the major universities have very serious food science programs. And to be an effective hashgacha, you don't necessarily have to have a food science degree, but you do have to have a very sound knowledge of food science. I'll give you a very interesting story. The OU has been involved in the last 2 years with a very large company from Switzerland, which is involved in the certification of food safety programs in companies around the world. We all know that food safety is a very relevant topic. People are very concerned. And they do certification of food safety. And we've been working with them on certain projects. And they said that in order for us to have an effective relationship, they need to train some of our people in food safety standards, because our people have smich and yoredei, but they don't have food safety degrees. And they were here, and we brought together a group of rabbanim from the office and a group of field people for a week, or maybe even it was more than a week, of sessions with their people to teach us. And when they walked out, they said, we can learn from your people more than they can learn from us. Because we have to know what's going on in technology. Every day we discover ingredients that we considered innocuous, that were always kosher, to be very complicated. Every day we discover there are new processes for making products that weren't there before, especially in the world that we live in now, where the world has become a very small place, where the OU is giving hashgacha to factories in every one of the 50 states of the United States and to 80 countries around the world. And actually, we probably could be giving hashgacha to more countries, but there are poshut countries where it's dangerous to go. Just last week, I got a request for a company in Jordan that wanted supervision, and we obviously are more worried about the safety of our mashgichim than giving hashgachas to every country, and we declined. And this guy said, now I know why Hezbollah is attacking the Israel, because you won't give a supervision in Jordan. I said, if that's the way we could solve that problem, it would be very good. But unfortunately, I don't think that's what's going to solve the problem. The bottom line is that given that hashgachas are now being given in countries, the OU in China itself is giving hashgacha to over 300 factories. And the way things are done in China are very different than the way they're done here. First of all, there's a cultural difference. In China, you'll have a factory that's as big as a city. In the United States, factories are generally smaller. And more importantly, and most relevant to giving a hashgacha, is that the natural resources of every country are very different. I mean, a perfect example is alcohol for Pesach. Alcohol in the United States, pashtus is kidneys, because there's such an abundance of corn in the United States. If they're going to be making ethanol, they're going to be making it from corn. Alcohol in China is very likely to be coming from sugar, from molasses, because that's the natural resource that they have. Again, I'm not saying that you could use it without hashgacha. I'm just saying these are the facts. And then alcohol coming from Europe is most likely to be from wheat, and we're dealing with chametz gomer. Or it could be wine, and we could be dealing with stam yena. So being current with food science and trends in food science is crucial to giving a successful hashgacha. But now I come to what might be the hardest part of giving a hashgacha nowadays. The Torah in this week's parasha mentions as one of the non-kosher birds, hachasida. And we all remember the famous Rashi, she'oisa chesed em chavrei seho. It's a bird that does chesed with its companions. And all the mefarshim discuss if it's such a Baal Chesed, and we've all been raised to look as Chesed as such a wonderful attribute, so why is that a bird that's not kosher? So I believe, there are a lot of pshatim, I'm sure all of you have heard and said pshatim, I'm not going to repeat them, but I believe that people who are involved in the giving hashgacha could have a very different perspective. As all of you are certainly aware, there are hundreds and hundreds of hashgachas around the world. And as I said a moment ago, the world is a village, and we're giving hashgacha all around the world. And obviously, in certifying a product, you have to make sure that every ingredient that you use in that product is kosher, is certified. So now, we, and this is something that the Rabbanim here do mamish every day. Now we have a company, wherever, whatever, making whatever product that sends us a list of ingredients. The first thing we have to do is analyze that list and analyze all the ingredients being used to make sure that they're all kosher. That's the first step. There's no point in even going to the factory until you look at that. And what's likely to be the situation is that many or some of the ingredients are being certified not by the OU. Now, the OU policy, and this is a very common question, so as you begin the week, I'll put it on the table. OU policy is that we do not insist that only OU-certified ingredients be used in OU-certified products. But we do insist that every ingredient have a hashgacha that we accept. So now that we have hundreds of ingredients and hundreds of hashgachas being certified by Rabbonim and Vadei Kashrus all around the world, whose credentials and standards might not meet ours, so it's very easy to be a chassido. It's very easy to do a chesed and tell the company, yes, you're guiding this ingredient under this hashgacha. It's a rabbi, and actually you could well understand when talking to a company, it's very hard to explain to a company that they have an ingredient, it has some symbol on it, they have a certificate, and it, to them all rabbis are the same, they don't know any of us, and why can't you use this ingredient? And there are shayles of Chil Hashem in explaining this, you could understand, because again, we're dealing with people who have very little interaction with us. So the easiest way would be to be a chassido, to do chesed, and say, the other Rav is giving a hashgacha, and we will accept the other Rav's hashgacha. But the Torah tells us that the chassida is a trefa bird. The Torah tells us you're not always supposed to be such a Baal Chesed. The Torah tells us that if you're taking the achrayis of giving hashgacha, and people are eating because you say that it's kosher, and we, the Rabbanim at the OU, don't hide behind the OU symbol. We take our jobs very seriously, and we take our responsibilities personally. Can't always do that. And we have to not only deal with the companies. The Rabbanim call, and they tell us, we're bigger Talmidei Chacham than you. Which yeshiva did you learn in? Which sefer did you write? And it's not always a pleasant situation. But again, as I said at the beginning, Leman Tilmad Liras Hashem Alakecha. Our obligation is Liras Hashem Alakecha, Yiras Shemayim is first. One more point about the State of the Union. A number of years ago, the Belzer Rebbe was in the United States, and he asked that Rabbi Ganak and I come see him. And we came to see him, and he tells us he's heard such positive things about the OU, and he's heard what wonderful things we're doing and how we're constantly, Baruch Hashem, improving. And he said he thinks it's time for the OU to take a new step. It's time for the OU to be makpin a Chol of Yisrael. That we should only certify products that are Chol of Yisrael. And we told him we appreciate the compliment and that we certainly are trying to improve constantly. But we have to remember what is the goal of the OU. The goal of the OU is not only to certify products for the Bnei Torah that are sitting in this room. The goal of the OU is to certify products for people all around the world. That was why the OU was created. And that is what we view as our mission on a day-to-day basis. For the person who doesn't have the level of commitment that the people in this room necessarily have, that if they don't find a product that meets their standard, they won't buy it or they won't eat. But if they have a product that's certified, even if it costs a little more to buy it, as long as it's certified. I saw an unbelievable story from Rambengus. Rambengus, as we know, was the Rosh Beis Din of the Eidah Charedus. And somebody walked into his room one day and they saw him crying. And they asked him, why are you crying? So he showed him the headline of the paper. The headline of the paper was that I don't know how many tons of non-kosher meat had been imported to Israel. So the person that walked into him said, you're the Rosh Bezdin at Eid HaCharedus, the Mei Sharim. Do you really believe that the Yidin, the Mei Sharim, are going to buy that meat? They're not going to check what meat they buy to make sure that the meat is 100% kosher? That you're worried that there's going to be a mechshel? He says, of course not. I have no shyly, he said, that the Yidin and Mei Sharim will not eat that meat. It won't ever come close to Yerushalayim, to Mei Sharim. He said, but who's going to eat that meat? Other Yidin. Don't we have an achrayus for those other Yidin also, that they shouldn't eat non-kosher meat? And at the end of the day, that achrayus is our achrayus, and it's an achrayus that we take, I hope, very seriously. The purpose of my talk was not to scare off anyone from getting involved in the field of giving hashgachas. On the contrary, it's a very exciting, challenging field. It's a field where you could do an avodas hakodesh and really contribute to the well-being of Klal Yisrael as long as you have the right attitude. And then the pasuk tells us that what is the bracha for the person who shemar v'shemata, Ki sasa toiva yoshev ein Hashem elokecha.